Welcome back to this week's edition of Techonomics. I'm the host, Jason Middleton. The election was the highest profile opportunity to shatter a glass ceiling for women in the history of the United States. That did not happen. And it hasn't been happening with very much regularity in the business world either at other levels. Women in business leadership roles is not representative of their value to a company's bottom line or the business culture on the whole. Joanne Lublin has been covering this issue for decades, and she's a Pulitzer Prize winner. She's also the management editor at the Wall Street Journal and former London bureau chief for that paper, the journal's first woman in such a role. And Ms. Lublin has published her first book. It's titled Earning It, Hard-Won Lessons from Trailblazing Women at the Top of the Business World. Here's my chat with Joanne Lublin.
I'm Joanne Lublin. I'm the management news editor for the Wall Street Journal in New York.
And also the author of the recent book, Earning It, Hard-Won Lessons from Trailblazing Women on Top of the Business World. Let's start at the beginning. What was the origin story for this most recent title of yours?
Well, this is my very first book, and it grew out of spending about the last quarter century writing about management and leadership issues for the Wall Street Journal, and also introducing our very first career column and trying to give back to the next generation of women, which includes my daughter.
And you also, you navigated some of this yourself, and I want to talk about some of the learnings, if you will, that you gleaned from other successful women in the business place. But you had to do some of this beginning in London, as I understand. Is that true?
Well, I started with the Wall Street Journal, actually, where you are, on the West Coast. I went to Stanford for grad school, and I got hired by the Wall Street Journal's San Francisco Bureau right out of graduate school. First woman that Bureau had ever hired in a reporting position. I then moved to Chicago, moved to Washington, and subsequently moved into management when I moved to the London Bureau in the late 80s.
It seems like we have decades of research, work, essays, academic and otherwise, profiles in careers, if you will, things like the diversity dividend. And what were you able to find in these anecdotal stories that might be more applicable to the workplace now as we're still fighting this battle 50 years later than we should?
Well, that's frankly what was most surprising about doing these interviews with 52 high-ranking corporate executive women, nearly two-thirds of whom are experienced public company CEOs. Not only were they fighting the battles when they first got into the workforce, but they were fighting the battles when they got into middle management, and they continue to fight the battles when they got into senior management, and in turn are coaching and advising younger women in the companies that they still run who are, you know, getting help from these women, but also these younger women are still fighting the same battles, in part due to their own failure to stand up for themselves. And I blame myself as much as I did some of the women in the book. I have a major theme in the book, which is those that don't ask, don't get.
We spoke with a former colleague of yours recently, Kara Swisher, about some of this. And her point was Silicon Valley seems to prove the easy stuff or fix the easy stuff, never the big stuff. And this is something that's been going on in Silicon Valley, the gender non-diversity in Silicon Valley for a long, long time. You have a lot of women CEOs in your book from Silicon Valley or the tech sector. What were you able specifically be able to pull out from them as well?
Well, I thought one of the most articulate women on that whole topic was Carol Bartz, who's twice been CEO of a tech company, Autodesk and Yahoo. And she talked about the fact that nowadays we still have what she calls the frat boy behavior. I quoted her in the book as saying they still gather together as males. Many of them still refuse to treat women as their equals. And at small, young firms nowadays, women still feel like they are, she said, living in a startup fraternity house, and they're excluded from the inner circle. And so what her advice was that young women who today want to get ahead in high tech should, quote, stay out of the way of real assholes.
I love using bleeps.
Sorry about that.
No, that's
but
okay.
I was on a panel just a couple nights ago where talking about the book, and one of my panelists was a woman CEO of a tech startup. And she was talking about the fact that she's cheered by the fact that there are now a handful of VC firms that focus on investing in women-owned firms, but discouraged by the fact that the overwhelming ranks of VC firms are still male-dominated and, frankly, not that interested in investing in women-owned businesses. In her case, she is marketing wearable technology, a bracelet that vibrates when you've got a voicemail in your phone stashed away in your purse. And she said she had very little trouble selling this idea in terms of getting investors among these handful of companies that invest in women-owned businesses. When she would go to the VC firms that were run by men, they would say, oh, I'll have to ask my wife about that.
Wow.
They couldn't relate to wearable technology.
Man, it just seems like the level of assholeness here in Silicon Valley still is at a fever pitch, but it's nice to see that there are some green shoots of
Absolutely. And that's another point that, you know, has been something that has encouraged me to kind of view the world from the high-tech side as being a glass half full rather than glass half empty. Some of the greatest pace setters in corporate America today are in the tech industry in terms of trying to pay attention, for instance, to the issue of gender pay inequities and doing extensive and thorough analyses of who gets paid what. Salesforce, for instance, did an exhaustive study, and at the end of the day, they adjusted a number of people's pay, but a lot of those were the guys' pay. So it's not always, you know, the women who are at a disadvantage.
Right.
The point is paying attention and making corrections and not taking the status quo as the way it ought to be.
I was going to say that CEO Mark Benioff is not one of the a-holes we were referring to so far, at least.
No, he's one of the male champions of women. And in fact, my last chapter of the book is exactly titled that, Male Champions of Women. And I profile three men from three different generations. And the last example is a guy named Ed Zimmerman. Ed Zimmerman is a man in his 40s. He's a lawyer who advises the testosterone-laden world of venture capitalists and has been an outspoken opponent of something called MANLs, which are men-only panels of experts at conferences, and took a public pledge in 2014 at a conference and then promoted it on his blog because he feels that keeping women off of these panels or outside of business dinners in the tech industry robs them of their chances to do business deals. And I quote him in that chapter as saying, opportunities emerge because you are proximate to interesting people.
That's a tactic adopted. Now, you have other tactics. What kind of comes to mind? Clever tactics, as I read in one of the blurbs for your book, Earning It, by Joanne Lublin. And I was wondering, what other stood out for you anecdotally when it comes to clever tactics that have been used? And then I want to kind of pivot back to what Benioff was doing with some of the quantitative stuff.
Clever tactics used, though, for what?
Clever tactics for women in the workplace looking to either move up or show their acumen.
I think the most clever tactic is hitching your star to somebody who is highly prominent within the company. And unfortunately, in 2016, for most ambitious women, that's still going to be a senior male executive. But of course, in the tech arena and other industries, that also is a path that is fraught with landmines because of the reluctance that some senior male executives have with being seen as the mentor for a young, attractive woman. Or in turn, where that isn't a concern, their colleagues then perceive that there's something more going on than a professional relationship. And so while you've got to have senior male executives willing to be your sponsor and put their professional career on the line on your behalf, you also have to make sure that nobody sort of perceives this in the wrong way.
Right. That's such a nasty shadow. It kind of leads me to...
And unfortunately, again, still true to an extensive degree today.
Mm-hmm. Are quotas clever tactics or dumb tactics when it comes to this?
I don't think our companies in this country would find quotas a very easy system to accept. And I don't think we're ever going to see that be legislated either on a regulatory or legal basis. Certainly, a number of countries in Europe, Norway having been in the forefront, have legislative quotas to try and increase the number of women on corporate boards. It has, you know, made them move ahead at light years pace in terms of changing the representation of women in the boardrooms. In our country, it's not kind of how we operate, and therefore we are advancing, but a much more sluggish pace.
Okay. My last question is a little bit off topic, and there may be nothing here whatsoever, but I have you on the phone for a couple more minutes at least. The performance-related bias, I'm wondering about the Land's End CEO, Federica Marchioni, if I'm saying that correctly, was excused 2 months ago. Was there anything there that we want to talk about during this interview, or is that something not really, nothing there?
Well, I don't really want to talk about a specific company that, you know, I don't have any inside knowledge about, but I think in general, one should look at a Rockefeller Foundation report that was released week before last, in which they looked at how the media cover companies in crisis. And to the extent that there's a woman CEO of the company, the crisis is often blamed on the CEO, they found. It often was the case. To the extent a man is the CEO, it's rare, much rarer, that the guy is blamed for whatever that corporate crisis is. So unfortunately, even today, because there are still relatively few women in the CEO spot, they live in even a greater glass house than male CEOs, who, of course, feel themselves in a position 24/7 as well. But there's even higher wall of glass on all sides when you're a woman CEO.
Joanne, thank you very much for your time this morning. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you.
And I hope you enjoy reading the book.
I will indeed. And I hope that maybe when you're out this way next time, we can get a beer or something.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. That was Joanne Lublin. She's the management editor at the Wall Street Journal and author of Earning It, Hard-Won Lessons from Trailblazing Women at the Top of the Business World. For a link to her book and other resources on breaking the glass ceiling, go to Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Coming up after we pay these bills with some short but appreciated advertisements, we have David Pogue, America's tech guy. This is Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back.